This Wednesday, August 23rd, 2017, on the one and only Republic Broadcasting Network. And as always, thanks for coming along for the ride. A wild and dystopic ride it is. This gets stranger all the time. And we are here and pressing on nonetheless in the name of freedom. Personal freedom, individual liberty, and classic libertarian freedom and liberty, that is, which has become unpopular these days. But we press on nonetheless. I am your host, Chris Hinckley, and we are all road warriors, those who esteem ourselves to be. And as always, feel free to dive into the chat area at Road Warrior Radio. chattango.com for interesting and lively discussion. So yesterday, we went down a bit of a rabbit trail. From discussing B.F. Skinner, we went back, so to speak, to the Reese Committee hearings. Why? What does that have to do with B.F. Skinner and the social engineers? Well, I hope to make that abundantly clear today. You see, the Reese Committee proved and testified before Congress as such that, yes, Virginia, there was indeed, or I should say is, a nefarious cabal plotting and scheming to control you and I via social engineers, mind control, really. And by the way, the word that I, or the term I couldn't think of yesterday, I couldn't recall, was assumptive tyranny. That's what I call it. It's assumptive tyranny, where decisions are made for you, and I think it's tyrannical. It's abusive, and so there are a number of decisions that are made. Tyranny can be defined a number of ways, but a quick Google search, and I know I get in trouble for that. But, you know, maybe I shouldn't want Google to see the kinds of things that I search for, but hopefully it's kind of, you know, how do you thwart their best efforts at data collection, aggregation, spying, surveillance, digital panopticon, me helping, well, maybe I corrupt the database a little bit by providing some fodder to the algorithms in classic liberal sense. Who knows? But the definition of tyranny, a Google search presents these results: cruel and oppressive government or rule, nation under cruel or oppressive government, cruel, unreasonable, or arbitrary use of power or control. Cruel, unreasonable, or arbitrary use of power or control. And that is precisely what I'm talking about. When decisions are made, and more, of course, they are these days, for you, without your consent, really without even acknowledgement, to go further along, you think about how things are made. It goes right back to what Bertrand Russell wrote. Those opening words from the Impact of Science, or from his book 1928 Propaganda. So it's assumptive tyranny by forced, coerced consent, quote unquote, psychological manipulation, or social engineering, and various other detestable and unsavory means.
Are you still skeptical, Mr. Conrad? Watch this. Barry.
What is he doing? He's making me do something.
What is he making me do?
You're not doing anything, Barry.
That's right, Barry. You're not doing anything.
I'm not doing anything. I'm paralyzed. Oh, God.
God can't hear you, Barry.
Tim.
Tim can't hear you, Barry.
No, actually, I can hear him.
Oh, my body's a prison. Oh, this is so painful.
I can't move, Tim. Tim, help me. Help me, Tim.
All right, you know what, Barry? Just move. You can do it. Just move.
I release you.
Oh, wow. Okay, I will never take movement for granted ever again.
So, I suppose if there's a humorous take on the subject, that's probably it. But it is psychological manipulation, social engineering. It's mind control, essentially. That was the mind control scene from Dinner for Schmucks. And so that's the message that we get. It's the overriding message. It's subtle. It's a whisper on the wind. No, it's good for you. It's what you want. All the crowdsourcing data, all the algorithms and AI clearly indicate, never mind, all that data is predicated on coercive manipulation and control. and is thus disingenuous, fallacious. But that data conclusively indicates that one button is best for you, all of you, every single one. And not to mention what you want. You want one button. You prefer it. The choice is like other buttons, or perhaps even no buttons at all. At least that's what the social scientists, the social engineers, aka the psychological manipulators, and more importantly, their handlers, their puppet masters, would have you and I believe. As an interesting aside, when it comes to communication, Dr. Albert Mehrabian is the pioneer of the largely misinterpreted 7-38-55% rule. For evidence, simply perform a web search for 55-38-7, and you'll see what I mean. Doing so, one may encounter author, speaker, trainer, consultant Patrick O'Malley's post entitled 55% Body Language, 38% Tone, 7% Words, The Myth About Body Language in Presentations. In his post, O'Malley writes, "You've heard the numbers, and they didn't make sense. It might have been in a presentation skills course or at Toastmasters. I've even seen it in Sandler sales training recently. Here they are. 55% of communication is visual, your body language. 38% of communication is your voice, tone, inflection, etc. 7% is verbal, your word. Really? Does that make any sense? It's actually 90% wrong. If it were true," O'Malley writes, "shouldn't you be able to understand 93% of a foreign language just by seeing the person talk? Shouldn't you be able to understand 55% of a speech on television with the sound turned off?" The famous 55-38-7% rule is actually a myth. It's based on a study done in 1967 by Dr. Albert Mehrabian, a professor of psychology at UCLA. But the study was completely misinterpreted by the media and passed on for decades as fact. Then the internet came along, and if you Google 55-38-7, you'll see a bunch of sites, including Wikipedia, that debunk the myth. Trainers and presentation skills coaches love the myth because it seems to substantiate the point of view that movement and tone are critical to a presentation. Authors like Jerry Weissman still use it as the basis for books published in 2009, even though the numbers are completely misleading. Of course, presentations are definitely improved by appropriate hand movements, physical movement by the presenter, great body language, raising and lowering the tone of voice to emphasize points. But those are not more important than the word. Also, if someone is boring and soft-spoken enough, some say yours truly, a lot of their message may be lost because the audience may not be paying attention. Hopefully not. However, the 55-38-7% numbers are a myth. And you can see plenty of references about it now on Google. Spread the word. So I'm spreading the word. For further clarification on this matter, Albert Mehrabian's Wikipedia entry is instructive. Without delving too far into minutia, the relevant clarification is provided to us by Dr. Mehrabian himself, drawing from his book in question, Silent Messages, Implicit Communication of Emotions and Attitudes, published in 1981, in clarifying the equation of, quote, total liking equals 7% verbal liking plus 38% vocal liking plus 55% facial liking. On his website, Dr. Mehrabian writes, quote, "Please note that this and other equations regarding relative importance of verbal and nonverbal messages were derived from experiments dealing with communications of feelings and attitudes, i.e. like, dislike. Unless a communicator is talking about their feelings or attitudes, these equations are not applicable." Also, see references 286 and 305 in Silent Messages. These are the original sources of my findings. This is a provocative irony, I would say. So according to Dr. Mehrabian's own clarification, communications concerning feelings and attitudes are comprised predominantly of nonverbal cues. So what's the point? Well, back to the original point about assumptive tyranny, psychological manipulation, control. In spite of this surprising fact, the clarification, it's just a nuance, really. Clarification by Dr. Mehrabian that communications concerning feelings and attitudes are comprised predominantly of nonverbal cues, according to a study, 1967 study. Yet in spite of this surprising fact, we're encouraged to relinquish and relegate control to let emails, texts, apps, and various other technologies supersede or perhaps supplant 93% of your effective communication, our voice, if you will, leaving a scant 7% to our own control. Think about it. We're trying to replace 93% of communication in the form of nonverbal cues with emoji. That's the message. Regarding where we've come to in the veritable age of progress, that should tell you all you need to know. And no wonder we have such problems communicating these days. Darren Lanier is right. You're not a gadget. You are not a gadget. Remember Darren Lanier's book I've mentioned many times. I presented excerpts from the month that it was published and forward. But Jaron Lanier's right. You're not a gadget. Despite the technocrats' grand dream to assimilate, synthetically alter, and or abolish you. Speaking of Jaron Lanier, his book, You're Not a Gadget, and these difficulties in communicating, what technology actually breeds is a cacophony of mindless automatons warring and buzzing, colliding into each other, and it seems to be a breeding ground for viciousness, which is an observation that Jaron Lanier makes in the preface of his book, by the way. Remember, I've read it before here. I'll give it to you again briefly from Jaron Lanier's book, You're Not a Gadget, A Manifesto, the preface. It's early in the 21st century. This was published in 2010. And that means that these words will mostly be read by non-persons, automatons, or numb mobs composed of people who are no longer acting as individuals. Provocative. The words will be minced into atomized search engine keywords within industrial cloud computing facilities located in remote, often secret locations around the world. They will be copied millions of times by algorithms designed to send an advertisement to someone, some person, somewhere, who happens to resonate with some fragment of what I say. It will be scanned, rehashed, and misrepresented by crowds of quick and sloppy readers into wikis and automatically aggregated wireless text message streams. The actions will repeatedly degenerate into mindless chains of anonymous insults and inarticulate controversies. That specifically is the point regarding the communication difficulties. But to continue, algorithms will find correlations between those who read my words and their purchases, their romantic adventures, their debts, and soon their gene. Ultimately, these words will contribute to the fortunes of those few who have been able to position themselves out, vast standing out of the faith of these words to take place almost entirely in life. Was feeling of an eye could use the words a tiny. Get it? Perfect. Stay. Be somebody before you share yourself. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Do you have difficulty taking supplements? Are you searching for a high-quality, complete nutritional drink that your whole family will love? NutriMedical's Life Support has arrived. All of your daily nutritional requirements in one quick, delicious drink. Dr. Bill Deagle's Life Support is a proprietary blend of vegan protein, activated vitamins, essential minerals, amino acids, probiotics, green tea, digestive enzymes, anti-inflammatories, cancer prevention, detoxification, and much more. Your body will high-five you for this one. Life Support is the best complete nutritious meal replacement on the market. Whether you are an elite athlete, have post-operative challenges, chronic illness, elderly, or a family that just wants a quick, delicious drink, try Dr. Bill Deagle's Life Support for optimized nutrition in one great-tasting smoothie. Just add cold water, almond milk, fruit, or anything else you like. NutriMedical's Life Support. Try our great-tasting chocolate or vanilla today. Call 888-212-8871 or visit us online at NutriMedical.com. NutriMedical.com for the whole family.
It's time for you to have your own custom smartphone app for your business and pay way less than you can imagine. Introducing the I Can Get To Silent Salesman mobile marketing app, a global mobile marketing and communication tool for your business. Go to appsapart.com and learn how you could earn up to $36,351 or more per month just by inviting two people or less into a $14.95 per month program. Go to appsapart.com and be sure to watch the video at the top of the site and listen to the audio message from the CEO near the bottom. This is something you won't want to miss. Go to appsapart.com now or call 646-860-9540. That's 646-860-9540. Get the I Can Get To. That's ICANGET, the number 2, Silent Salesman app at appsapart.com. That's appsapart.com.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855, the number 2, keep it today.
So hopefully this is becoming clear, but let me give you now, let's go back to the Reese Committee. Let me give you the Reese Committee's take on this subject. It wasn't just, see, what was the point that the Reese Committee discovered? The Cox Committee, which was the first endeavor into H.R. 217, the House Committee on Un-American Activities, officially titled United States House Select Committee to Investigate Tax-Exempt Foundations and Comparable Organizations. So you'll recall, because we've discussed this before, there were two parts to the House Select Committee to investigate tax-exempt foundations and comparable organizations, or two efforts. The first was, and they were both named after their chairs, the first was the Cox Committee, which investigated broadly, it said, but not really. It was a sort of dismissive investigation. And again, according to the Cox Committee, their findings were really summarized by this statement. So far as we can ascertain, there is little basis for the belief expressed in some quarters that foundation funds are being diverted from their intended use. Very disingenuous, very misleading statement. Nope, nothing to see here. So as the Wikipedia entry points out, unhappy with the Cox Committee's conclusions, Representative Reese pushed for a continuation of its work. In April 1954, the House authorized the Reese Committee. Unlike its predecessor, which limited its attention to generalities, the Reese Committee mounted a comprehensive inquiry into both the motives for establishing foundations and their influence on public life. The investigative inquiry was headed by Norman Dodd, a former banker. And Norman Dodd was more than just a former banker. He was sort of an insider type of a guy who had graduated from Yale University and was, by his own admission, what he called an indefatigable reader. He was a sort of blue-collar insider, if you will. And a little background on Norman Dodd. During the stock market crash of 1929, he was assigned by his superiors, he was in banking, of course, assigned by his superiors the task of restructuring the bank he was working at, after a period of which he recommended what at that time was referred to as sound banking. He was told by his superiors that his recommendation would not be implemented because, quote, we will never see sound banking in the United States again, end quote. And for more on, well, just a little bit on the work of the Reese Committee with Norman Dodd as director of research. Again, drawing from the Wikipedia entry on Norman Dodd, his claims about his investigative work have become the cornerstone of theories implicating the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, Ford Foundation, and Rockefeller Foundation, among others. Implicated as far as what? Well, we'll talk more about that when we come back. Stick around, more right after this break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldnesoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
It's time for you to have your own custom smartphone app for your business and pay way less than you can imagine. Introducing the I Can Get To Silent Salesman mobile marketing app, a global mobile marketing and communication tool for your business. Go to appsapart.com and learn how you could earn up to $36,351 or more per month just by inviting two people or less into a $14.95 per month program. Go to appsapart.com and be sure to watch the video at the top of the site and listen to the audio message from the CEO near the bottom. This is something you won't want to miss. Go to appsapart.com now or call 646-860-9540. That's 646-860-9540. Get the I Can Get To. That's ICANGET, the number 2, Silent Salesman app at appsapart.com. That's appsapart.com.
Welcome back. Welcome back. You heard it again. You heard it again during the break. You heard Mike Rivero's call to action in the break to support this network, RBN. It is such a one-sided narrative that we hear, and people don't even realize it. We are swimming upstream here at this network in a current that really is more swift every day. It's so swift at this point, it feels like a waterfall. It feels like we're swimming not just upstream, but up gravity, which really is impossible, right? It's very difficult. So it's interesting how one-sided this battle being waged really is in which we find ourselves. And as I said yesterday, here's the litmus test. Speaking of the subject matter in the Reese Committee, the House Select Committee to investigate tax-exempt foundations and comparable organizations. It's the subject of yesterday's and today's broadcast. What do you mean? Well, as I said yesterday, here is one litmus test, perhaps the litmus test. Where is the Ford Foundation to support the work of RBN? Or like comparable, comparable organization? Where is the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation to support the work of RBN? Where is the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation to support the work of RBN? And so many others, on and on and on and on and on the list goes of these foundations. Surely there must be one or two or ten out of hundreds of thousands, even at the time the Reese Committee was investigating, 300,000 or so, they said, of these tax-exempt foundations and comparable organizations. Certainly there must be one or five or ten that are interested in contributing. Nope, not a one. Not a one. Why? Because they've all been sewn up in the same psychological thriller plot. Their ultimate aim is the control of you and I, the regimenting of every aspect of our lives, from dawn till dusk, from cradle to grave. And this network stands in opposition to that effort. It is inimical to that effort and that interest. And therefore, your support is vital, essential, and necessary, and greatly appreciated. Really, in a sense, you are the unsung hero of this network. And as I said, in a certain sense, so your support is greatly appreciated. We're talking about the House Select Committee to investigate tax-exempt foundations and comparable organizations. I explained why the Reese Committee, again, from the Wikipedia entry on the House Select Committee to investigate tax-exempt foundations and comparable organizations, there was the initial effort led by Edward Cox of the House of Representatives to investigate, quote, the educational and philanthropic foundations and other comparable organizations which are exempt from federal taxes to determine whether they were using their resources for the purposes for which they were established. Again, that's kind of a misleading ambiguity, and especially to determine which such foundations and organizations are using their resources for un-American activities and subversive activities or for purposes not in the interest or tradition of the United States. Now that sounds like we're getting somewhere. But the Cox Committee's conclusion, as I previously stated, was, so far as we can ascertain, there is little basis for the belief expressed in some quarters that foundation funds are being diverted for their intended use. That was from the Cox report to the Select Committee. And again, from the Wikipedia entry, I'm happy with the Cox Committee's conclusions. Representative Carol Reese pushed for a continuation of its work in April 1954. The House authorized the Reese Committee, unlike its predecessor, which limited its attention to generalities. How can you tell anything if you just give a cursory glance? It's a rhetorical question, obviously, which is why the Cox Committee came to the conclusion it did. That was what it was supposed to do. Nope, nothing to see here. They did exactly what they were instructed to do by the same folks, by the way, that run the foundations. Foundations aren't going to investigate themselves. The committees were just supposed to provide an insular layer of plausible deniability, that's all, as is generally the case. So unlike its predecessor, which limited its attention to generalities, the Reese Committee mounted a comprehensive inquiry, but not really. Listening to the testimony of the folks, Carol Reese, Norman Dodd, Thomas McNeese, Renee Wormser in particular, listening to these folks, you come to the understanding that they were vastly outgunned. They were, their research effort was overwhelming. They had limited resources. We'll talk more about that in a minute. But so they attempted to mount a comprehensive inquiry. It was certainly much more comprehensive than the Cox Committee's effort into both the motives for establishing foundations and their influence on public life. The investigative inquiry headed by Norman Dodd a former banker, Yale graduate, etc. As I read, so from the excerpt, Norman Dodd's Wikipedia entry, the excerpt titled "Tax Exempt Foundations." Again, backing up slightly, his claims about his investigative work have become the cornerstone of theories. This is an interesting. See how Wikipedia kind of sanitizes things. Theories implicating the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, Ford Foundation, and the Rockefeller Foundation, among others. Theories, indeed, preposterous. They're facts that were proven, that were borne out by the Reese Committee in their reports to Congress and their testimony. It was stated by Norman Dodd that these or other foundations were involved in the intentional instigation of the United States into World War I and attempting to mold world history through the explicit control of education in the United States. But why? Again, why? And this is where we get right back to the B.F. Skinners of the world, the social engineers. After all, what is social engineering? It is psychological manipulation, the control of the organized habits and opinions of the masses, as Edward Bernays put it in the opening words of his book Propaganda in 1928. Bernays Wormser, the legal counsel to the Reese Committee, wrote in his 1958 book on this, on the subject, quote, it is difficult for the public to understand that some of the great foundations which have done so much for us in some field have acted tragically against the public interest in others. And how is the public interest defined? Well, I mentioned that yesterday from the Reese Committee. But the facts, Wormser wrote, are there for the unprejudiced to recognize. That's from the Wikipedia entry. And Renee Wormser's book was republished in 1993. You can find it on Amazon.com, among other places. Foundations, Their Power and Influence. It is it's a very important book, and it's been discussed recently on this broadcast. Dave in Wisconsin has mentioned it as recently as last week, for example, among others, that should be essential reading for every American. You can have different beliefs. There are those, what you might call in this context, those issues that are not salvation issues, so to speak. But then there is essential reading. This gets right to the point that Jefferson was making, for example, Thomas Jefferson, in his bill for the more general diffusion of knowledge. And that preface that I always read, Jefferson's bill for the more general diffusion of knowledge. There are, yes, Virginia, there are those that want to control other people. It's just fascinating. It's so remarkable. Here is a simple, obvious question. These people use science so that they can say the science is settled, which you know is completely disingenuous. And speaking of Dave in Wisconsin, I agree with Dave when he said nothing is settled that is wicked. That is certainly an apropos point to make in this case. But they'll use science and say, well, this is how it works. It's just science. But they're talking about you and your predilections, so to speak. And so the question, the simple rhetorical question is, who has more of a vested interest in your success? Who has more of a fiduciary responsibility to you, so to speak, than you? Who has more of a vested interest in your success, you or the social engineer? But we know, of course, from experiments like the Milgram experiment, that folks will listen to a white coat sometimes before they'll even listen to themselves. It wasn't long ago that people were very skeptical of those folks. They knew, for example, there were the, you know, the adages about not going to the hospital unless you want to die. That's where people go to die. Very cynical and skeptical of doctors and hospitals and so forth. There's a reason they call it practicing medicine, folks used to say. No offense, not trying to cast aspersions at all. Just a healthy skepticism is all. We've lost that. Now we're propagandized. We see, as I've said before, the two paid actors on a screen. One is paid to have a sad face, while the voiceover, the narrator, says, this person's depressed, but it's okay. They can go to this other white coat, this other paid actor, the white coat, and they talk for a minute, these two paid actors, or so it seems. There's a social interaction, and the paid actor with the white coat gives the paid actor with a sad face a slip, a prescription, and then the paid actor with a sad face suddenly has a happy face because that actor is paid to have a happy face then. And people watch that and think, the voiceover, the narrator said, ask my doctor about, they don't even say, ask your doctor if it's right for you anymore, because that'll get him in trouble. Since yesterday's wonder drug is tomorrow's class action lawsuit. Never mind about that. But I should ask my doctor about whatever it is. The rebranded, rebadged wonder drug / class action lawsuit. Because in most cases, the fast tracking is just a rebadging of the same old crap that they've run through. So they fast track it through. It's the same drug. And it's tomorrow's wonder drug, only to become the next class action lawsuit because it's the same drug that ended up in a class action lawsuit last time. It's just rebadged. But I digress. We're supposed to know these things and learn these lessons, like what Renee Wormser and the Reese Committee were trying to point out. So Jefferson, in his Bill for the More General Diffusion of Knowledge, in the preamble, said exactly what we should know. Think, it's just this simple. Whereas it appeareth that however certain forms of government are better calculated than others, is it this constitutional republic? Why was it cast as a republic and not a democracy or something? What is better about this constitutional republic than hardcore socialism or communism? And some will say they're just different names for the same thing, or communitarian society. We go back to Robert Owen, etc., etc. What is the point? Well, we could split hairs over that, but as Jefferson points out, whereas it appeareth that however certain forms of government are better calculated than others to protect individuals in the free exercise of their natural rights. That's what it's all about. Protecting individuals in the free exercise of their natural rights. We have been coerced, psychologically manipulated to a point where we don't even understand that's what it's all about. We've been herded into this mindset of some kind of greater good that is an oxymoron. The greater good treats everyone like a number and therefore is not good for anyone. It's that one size fits all snuggie that doesn't fit anyone. The ultimate oxymoron in the tyranny and abuse of everyone. So whereas it appeareth that however certain forms of government are better calculated than others to protect individuals in the free exercise of their natural rights, you feel it. When that happens, it feels like a window is thrown open, a door is thrown open. It's a burst of fresh air. You can actually do what you want and behave yourself, and you're treated like an adult who has some modicum of self-control. How liberating that feels. How happy that makes us. Whereas it appeareth that however certain forms of government are better calculated than others to protect individuals in the free exercise of their natural rights, and are at the same time themselves better guarded against degeneracy, yet experience has shown that even under the best forms, those entrusted with power have, in time and by slow operations, perverted it into tyranny. Is that where we are today? And it is believed that the most effectual means of preventing this would be to illuminate, as far as practicable, the minds of the people at large, and more especially to give them knowledge of those facts which history exhibiteth, that possessed thereby of the experience of other ages and countries, they may be enabled to know ambition under all its shapes, and prompt to exert their natural powers to defeat its purposes. That's what it's all about. That knowledge, whereby we should be possessed of, you know, the knowledge of other ages and countries, that would allow the slowing of ambition under all its shape, so that we, the people, should be prompt to exert our natural powers to defeat its purposes. Yet we have forgotten the lessons of history, haven't we? And here we find ourselves. The sad reality is that we've been conditioned to forget the past for obvious reasons. Because as Santayana pointed out, we remember the last part of the quote, but it blunts the point. To just hear the words, those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. So what? No. The whole quote helps. I think it's more instructive. Progress, and you know, Jacques Ellul said the myth of progress makes it easier to sell a man an electric razor than a straight one. The myth of progress. No, this progress means that this electric one works better. Actually, not so much. So as Santayana pointed out, in the life of reason, progress, far from consisting in change, depends on retentiveness. Progress depends on retentiveness. How high is our level of retentiveness? How high is our commensurate level of progress then? When change is absolute, there remains no being to improve and no direction is set for possible improvement. No wonder millennials are castigated and generally stereotyped as sitting on their parents' couch in the basement playing video games, because that's the world that they've grown up in. When change is absolute, there remains no being to improve and no direction is set for possible improvement. This is why I say to those who say, well, we can turn the tide on this, we could do what we've done in history, the Reagan era, or even going back to the post World War II era, we can turn it around. I disagree. Something more fundamental has to change first. When change is absolute, there remains no being to improve and no direction is set for possible improvement. And when experience is not retained, as among savages, infancy is perpetual. Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. And so repeating it sounds sort of, it's almost a misleading sort of phrase or turn of phrase. Because what we're doing today in America is not so much repeating the past as just we're in a closed loop, an infinite loop scenario. A virtual lock on this thing that the Reese Committee investigated, that certain folks, certain ne'er-do-wells created, with specific intent of controlling you and I. So back to Renee Wormser, the legal counsel to the Reese Committee. As I said, Renee Wormser's book, republished in 1993, can be found on Amazon, among other places. Think about how, I mean, the power and the capability that we have, and Amazon will tell you other books folks are interested in. You find Customers who bought this item also bought, you find books by folks like Anthony Sutton, James Perloff, Carol Quigley, John Robison, proofs of a conspiracy against all the religions and governments of Europe carried on in the secret meetings of Freemasons, Illuminati, and Reading Society. Daniel Estulin's book, Judith Reisman's book, and others. Think about the power of this tool. And we take it entirely for granted in most cases. What a sad state of affairs. But from the description on Amazon of Renee Wormser's book, published in 1958, republished in 1993, Foundations of Power and Influence, here's a description. This is a searching analysis of some of America's most powerful tax-exempt foundations, their actions as opposed to their stated purposes, the interlocking groups of men who run them, and their influence on the country at large. Interesting, this and other books like it by folks involved in the Race Committee's work allows them to tell their own unvarnished account of what happened, as opposed to the continual thwarting of their efforts in the congressional testimony. If you read the testimony, you know what I'm talking about. There are certain folks, Congressman Hayes, for example, and others that are continually trying to divert and misdirect the efforts of the Reese Committee and their findings. The author, as counsel to the Reese Committee, the description states, which investigated foundations for the last Republican Congress, gained a unique insight into the inner workings of the various Rockefeller, Carnegie, and Ford-created giants. He also witnessed the intense and powerful opposition to any investigation of these multi-billion-dollar public trusts. The Reese investigation was virtually hamstrung from the start to its early demise, which was aided and abetted by leading newspapers of the country. Quote, it is difficult for the public to understand, writes Wormser, that some of the great foundations which have done so much for us in some fields have acted tragically against the public interest in others. But the facts are there for the unprejudiced to recognize, indeed the unprejudiced. And you can see in the congressional testimony how deeply prejudiced some were. Why? Interesting. As they sit there and say, these certain of the largest foundations have been embarking on an increasingly un-American course of action and funding and grant making. And you hear folks like Representative Hayes saying, so are you saying that they've just done nothing good? They've done nothing. Oh, okay. Never mind that the overwhelming majority of their grant making is to fund un-American activities. But have they done one or two things that you say? Okay, well, see, everything they do isn't bad. Come on. Efforts like that to misdirect. Continuing, the power of the individual foundation giant is enormous. When there is like-mindedness among a group of these giants, remember what I said about swimming upstream? Where is the Ford Foundation? The Alfred P. Sloan, the John B. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation for grants for RBN's work. The power of the individual giant, the individual foundation giant is enormous. When there is like-mindedness among a group of these giants, it apparently is due to the existence of a closely knit group of professional administrators. In the social science field, the power is magnified hugely. Such foundations do good, they justify taxes and make harm, it can be immense harm. There's really no possibility. Alice, I'll be right back. Second hour, come up, Brad.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.